Welcome and thanks for downloading Podvocacy with Jason and David.
I'm Jason.
And I'm David. And we have guests on the line. Introduce yourselves, guests.
I thought you were going to do it for us.
Oh, well, I guess I could do that. All right, let me start over then.
No, it's okay. So it's Leonard of, Long Box Heroes, Dad's Tractions, which I think will be back. I don't know. Maybe. That's not up to me.
It's up to your partner.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Todd from Long Box Heroes and Long Box Heroes After Dark.
Ooh.
Oh, that's right. I always forget about After Dark.
Hey, After Dark's some of my favorite stuff, so I got to plug it where I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never forget about After Dark. After Dark's great.
So we have been joined by two of our favorite people, Leonard and Todd, and we are going to talk about the happenings this weekend from the WWE. This past weekend was SummerSlam, as well as NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, and they also did Raw from Brooklyn. Three shows, three nights from the same place. Is that a first?
Haven't they done that with like the UK tours when they'll do like a house show, and then they'll do, like, Raw and SmackDown?
Maybe. That's possible.
Maybe. Oh, no, you know what it is? They'll do, like, two shows, but they'll do, like, the double, like, mega taping for Raw and SmackDown.
Right. That's true.
Okay.
So this is going to be a pretty loose, you know, we're just going to run down things and talk about how we felt about what happened. Maybe talk a little bit about NXT TakeOver. I know three of the four of us probably watched some of it.
Sorry.
I watched a little bit. I watched the only thing that matters when it comes to NXT.
I know. You and your Kevin Owens fandom.
That's right.
The William Regal announcement of the Dusty Rhodes Memorial Tournament.
I am so all about that.
Oh, yeah.
I am so excited for that. So how do we feel about this weekend? Was it generally fun?
I still like wrestling.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
After this weekend, even though when it's all said and done and you take in a 3-hour Raw, less commercials, a 2.5-hour NXT and a 4-hour pay-per-view over the course of, 3 days, it's old hat to me. I still like wrestling.
Yes. I would agree with that.
It was a lot of wrestling for me in one sitting, way more than I'm used to. but I enjoyed it. I had some problems, some things, but it's like the whole McGill. You have to ups and downs, hills and valleys.
Sure. Absolutely. And I know Jason, you showed Grayson his first WWE pay-per-view this weekend.
Yes. My son was, chilling out with us before bedtime and, he saw most of the Randy Orton Sheamus match, which, maybe not his best match to start with, but hey.
Well, I mean, look.
He hates wrestling.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were trying to get him to go to sleep, I mean.
He saw the one match I didn't.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and like everyone on Twitter told you, that was okay to miss that. Now, because of that, I actually ended up missing the next match, which I believe was Rusev and
Ziggler?
Ziggler.
No, the tag team.
Tag team match.
Okay,
the four-way
tag team. So we went to go put him down for Rusev Ziggler. So I did see the tag team match, thankfully. So yeah, he got a little taste of it. And all I watched SummerSlam was all I saw from the weekend.
Okay.
Since I do have the network again, because I watched SummerSlam, I will go back and check out at least two matches from NXT, if not the whole thing. And then for Raw, I'm basically just going to have to listen to what you guys say, because as we all know, the network doesn't put Raw on for, what is it, like a month or so? Maybe more?
It's something like that. I think it's like almost like 6 weeks.
Yeah, sometimes. I think that's right.
Yeah.
You know, someday, though, it's going to be the only place you can see all the stuff, which will actually be nice. It will probably be better for us.
You know what? It probably won't.
You don't think?
No, because they would lose so much money in ad revenue unless they restructure the contracts. But the contract with USA just came up a year ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be a while before.
Yeah, it's going to be a while.
Okay.
Because even as bad as the ratings do get sometimes, like, it's still a relatively highly rated cable show, like, not in comparison to, like, Monday Night Football or things like that. but it's the ad revenue. And that's why everyone's like, man, these 3-hour Raws, man, these 3-hour Raws. It's never not going to be a 3-hour
Raw. It will go to 4 hours before it goes to 2 hours.
There you go. Yeah. Perfect. Yes.
It'll go to 4 hours before it goes to 2 hours.
Yep. You know, yeah.
Absolutely. Here's what I'll say about NXT TakeOver. I would highly recommend watching the whole show. Tyler Breeze versus Jushin Thunder Liger was a lot of fun.
Oh, I do want to see Liger too. So, okay.
That was
great.
Yeah,
I watched the whole thing.
You know, even some of the matches that weren't great were probably the best possible versions of themselves. The Samoa Joe Baron Corbin match was 5 minutes of two big guys beating the heck out of each other. and it was, I feel like NXT has taken a big step every takeover that they've produced. And this was no different.
Okay, I will say this. The TV of late has not been the best, but it used to be the best. Like, the NXT TV show used to be, like, top-notch,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yes.
But with Hideo Itami being hurt, with Sami Zayn being hurt, with Owens being, like, half there, half not there, with the transition of the girls up to the main roster, things have been getting a little bit lean on TV, right?
True, yes.
I was worried about TakeOver, but that's the thing about these TakeOver shows. They are almost like very well-paced indie shows, and, you know, that's a topic for another day regarding NXT and, in you know, their relationship to the indies and everything.
Right.
But, like, you have an opener that's designed to be hot and to be, you know, exciting and make the crowd, you know, go up. And then you have a tag team match, and then you have these kind of matches, and then you have a match to bring the crowd back down a little bit to let them kind of relax. And then you debut a new guy, and then you go into this, and there's things to break it up. There's no, like, big 20-minute long talking segment at the beginning.
Right.
Like, even the talking segment at the beginning was, you know, Hunter in the ring for, like, what, 5 minutes at the most?
Not even that.
Right. So I think the best thing about the NXT shows is, like, if you watch the whole thing, like, you feel like you're watching an entire show. Whereas if you even, like, watch Raw or any of the other pay-per-views, it's like there's no, like, through line to the show. It's just like, here's a bunch of matches.
Yes, it's a bunch of sketches and a bunch of matches.
Right.
And that's it.
But like I said, as David had mentioned before, the Bayley Sasha Banks match, great, not greatest of all time, but really, really good.
Right.
And Owens and Balor, again, good, not great. In hindsight, you know, people have postulated that they should have flipped the order of the two. But as if it was the same exact matches and they had the girls go on last following a ladder match, the crowd may not have been as excited, if that makes any sense.
I completely can see that. I thought the tag team match, the Vaudevillains versus Blake and Murphy, was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a sucker for the Vaudevillains, though, because they have a super indie gimmick that, you know, other people share that I really enjoy. So that kind of old timey wrestling thing.
I got to see their, like, while we were going through the NXT, fast forwarding through the pay per view to get to the Owens match, the fancy gentleman was like, okay, I know what you're going to like. I have to stop on their entrance. And I could not stop laughing.
The Carnival Barker.
And the fact that they come out and they're yelling but not saying anything was killing me. It's like the silent movie. And I'm like, this is the best. It's all in black and white, even when they get into the ring. And I'm like, you know what? This is the kind of stuff that makes me want to pay $9.99 for the network.
Yes, absolutely. I have said for a very long time that NXT was worth the $9.99 by itself. And as of late, to Leonard's point, the NXT television show itself had not necessarily has been that. But these takeovers are great. And this one especially.
Right. And NXT TV is still good. It's
right.
Just like there was a period of time there for, like, you know, a good 6 month stretch where it was like the best wrestling on TV. It was the best hour of wrestling on TV, bar none.
Yep.
As someone who hasn't seen it, let me ask a question then. Is it something like you're just trying to tell me that, like, this is so good for a while, like 6 months, let's say, but then you're like, oh, these guys are so good, let's give them debuts on Raw and stuff like that. So it kind of dilutes the pool of NXT, or is it something else? They just like lost some of their luster another way.
Well, some of the main draws, as you know, as I had mentioned before, like you had all these up and coming guys, and one of three things are going to happen. Either the same guys are going to be on TV, and NXT does a good job of kind of cycling people on and off. Like you don't get the same guys because it's only an hour every week. But when guys get injured, now we have to move guys up who may not be ready for that spot, or you know, shuffle things around and plans change. But then when someone like Owens goes up to the main roster, he's not going to be on NXT every week because he's going to be on Raw and SmackDown. And even if he is on NXT, now you've seen him on Raw, you've seen him on SmackDown, now he's on NXT. And it's just like, all right, like, I don't think Todd will ever get sick of Kevin Owens, but I'm just using him as an example because he's a guy who has been on all three shows, like, repeatedly for the last 2 months.
The hardest working man in wrestling right now.
But yeah, it's less that NXT, like, it's still a really good show. Like, don't get me wrong. It's just like these shows are like 7.5, 8s, where previously they were doing like 9.5, 10s on a weekly basis.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't have a whole lot more to say about NXT TakeOver. I would suggest that if you haven't watched the whole thing, that I would go back and watch it.
Absolutely.
So SummerSlam. So,
yes.
So, 4 hours long. Five hours if you watch the pre-show. I think I fast-forwarded through it trying to see if there were going to be any matches on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there were.
I don't think there were either.
So,
there were not.
Okay. So we had that. And then we started SummerSlam off with the buddy cop film that I want to see now, which is Mick Foley and Jon Stewart. Bonus points if WWE Films makes Brock Lesnar the bad guy. Cause that opening segment made me laugh. I'm not a huge fan of the celebrity involvement a lot of times because, you know, it's a lot of times it's a guy coming out who's there to promote something and he's there because his agent told him that he should do it and he's making money and he's, you know, propping up his career or whatever. But you know, when guys like Jon Stewart and Stephen Amell come on the show and they appear to have a real love for wrestling, that helps it go a long way for me.
I was thinking of that, like Jon Stewart and Mick Foley. Like I watched the Attitude Era, so I'm a Mick Foley fan.
Sure.
Born on the same day, actually. Not the same year, but we have the same birthday. So I thought that was funny, and I thought that was the strongest of Jon Stewart's bits, like, you know, because obviously he's doing the Jon Stewart character on the show, and it made me laugh really hard. Where, and when we get to it later, when he was on Raw, I thought he was trying too hard on Raw, where this just seemed like Mick knows how to work the crowd and work with Jon, and I was like, this is a blast. It was great to me the way they started out SummerSlam.
Absolutely.
I thought it was weird that they started out with a comedy bit like that. I mean, big pay-per-view, 4 hours, you would expect the match to start it off.
Well, it's sort of the same thing that they did at WrestleMania 30 when they had Steve Austin, The Rock, and Hulk Hogan come out. And that was the infamous Superdome, Silverdome switch.
Yes.
Oh, God, yes.
In the wrong town.
And granted, yep. And granted, that was after there was a match on the pre-show for that show. And so that did go after that. But I kind of do see trying to get people in, or, you know, trying to give a buffer at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, and I mean.
Go ahead, Jason.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, nothing against Mick Foley. I love Mick Foley, but, you know, I think there's a bit of a difference between Jon Stewart and him versus The Rock and Austin and Hogan as far as just keeping the crowd fired up. Because, I mean, they didn't do the pyro until after the whole thing, which I guess that makes sense. So I guess there is a precedent, but I just thought it was really weird that here I am for this 4-hour event that I just reactivated my $10 subscription for, and I get to watch a comedy bit for about 5 minutes. So it was weird. I'm not going to say I hated it or anything. I was just very surprised by it.
It could have been worse. It could have been Triple H coming out and just talking for 20 minutes.
It wouldn't surprise me, actually.
That is true. That is true.
Not a fan of long talky segments to open up a pay-per-view. Pay-per-view should open hot
yes.
with a match, not people talking. Is it strange just to me that Jon Stewart, given his, like, and again, we mostly know Jon Stewart as his persona as the host of The Daily Show, right?
Right.
Yeah.
This would be like finding out that, like, Norm MacDonald, like, knowing who Norm MacDonald is, like, that he's a huge wrestling fan. Like, a huge wrestling fan to me. It's still really weird to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It doesn't.
But
it doesn't.
I love
to me.
The fact that he is a wrestling fan. You know, anyone who's a major celebrity in any way, shape, or form, and the argument can be made, Jon Stewart is a very major celebrity, and the fact that he's willing to kind of be a part of wrestling is awesome.
Well, he was a part of fake news, so why not? Why not fake entertainment?
Well, and the argument can be made that more people probably got their real news from a fake news program.
Yeah,
maybe
true.
We're getting their
that's
real sports from a
true.
Fake sports program.
That's
America.
True.
But the opening segment was fine for what it was. I like Jon Stewart just fine. I love Mick Foley, but yeah.
Okay. So the first match we had was Randy Orton versus Sheamus. Battle of guys who, as we talked about on Podvocacy last week, right up there with Ziggler and Kofi as two guys who have wrestled each other the most since I've been back watching wrestling over the past 5 years. This match started off interesting with Orton trying to hit the RKO right at the beginning of the match. And I thought that was an interesting bit of psychology. Sometimes you get into these traps of starting every match one way, you know, always a collar and elbow tie up. And I liked the idea of Orton trying to go for his big move right at the beginning of the match and maybe finish it off quick. What did everybody else think about this match?
Todd, I know you didn't watch it.
Right.
I have yet to see this match, okay. So I'm going to stay out of this one.
It wasn't very memorable.
I would agree with that. I would agree with
that.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I lean as well. It was not memorable. It was a match that happened. We saw it. It was no better or worse than any of their other matches that they've had.
Right.
It was fine. I know there was a lot of people who were postulating that perhaps Sheamus was going to lose, and then they were just going to repeat what they did with Seth at Mania and have him come and cash in, because during the Seth-Cena match, I'm glad that they didn't. I'm glad that they gave Sheamus a victory, being that he is the person who holds the Money in the Bank, technically the person who is going to contend next for the World Heavyweight title.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times it seems as though you win the Money in the Bank briefcase and then you just lose for 6 months until you win the title. And we're supposed to forget that you've lost for the last 6 months. So a win here, you know, he just needs to, if it's the beginning of him keeping winning, you know, we'll see, but I don't think it is.
Right. It probably is not, just because that's what history tells us. So there was an interesting moment in this match. Sheamus did his like battering ram slingshot maneuver into an RKO. And, you know, typically that's one of those things that they would hammer home about how impressive it is. Was it just me, or did that just not really look all that impressive?
Sometimes it looks better than others. Okay. This one, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
one of those things, and it's one of those things when Randy hits the RKO and doesn't get the pin off of it, you kind of can figure out that he's probably not going to win this match.
There you go.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, little telegraphing there. So.
And at this point, any Randy Orton match that doesn't feature him launching someone 10 feet in the air and then giving him an RKO kind of falls flat anymore.
That's fair.
I still can't get over the fact I saw that at one point, and that was fantastic.
All right. So next we had the four-way tag team match. The New Day, Los Matadores. New Day Rocks.
Day Rocks.
The Primetime Players and the Lucha Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
This was the New Day show.
It totally was.
From beginning to the end, the other three teams do not matter, did not matter in the slightest. This was just all the New Day and their shenanigans, their whatever. And again, I'm worried how long they can keep it going for.
Me
if that
too.
Makes any sense.
It totally does. In between the time that we recorded Podpixie and the time we started recording this, I was talking to Jason about what happened on Raw last night. And I was saying that I truly believe that Xavier Woods has become one of the most entertaining guys on the roster.
So oh, my God, yes.
So you have – so for people who didn't see it, this match opened up with the New Day coming out and singing a version of Empire State of Mind by Jay-Z and Alicia Keys with parody lyrics about themselves. They ran down Brooklyn's contributions to hip hop, mm-hmm. which with Brooklyn is where hip hop started, and they gave all the credit to Southern hip hop.
Right.
And then last night on Raw, they came out, Kofi and Big E came out, and you know, you were kind of wondering where Xavier was, and he came out playing a trombone, and they did a parody version of New York, New York. With Xavier playing the on the trombone. And then, like, during the match that they had, like, toward the finish, he played taps. And it was literally, these three guys have come so far since the beginning of this gimmick.
Hey.
Now, I will say this. Lately, especially, and this is, yes. this is high praise. This very much reminds me of the Edge and Christian act of the early 2000s into like whatever it is. Like that's the current day version of this.
They are the new reeking of, don't you dare be sour is the new reeking of awesomeness.
Right. And as good as they are and as entertaining as they are for me, at the very least, if the only thing that the act was Big E dancing, it's still the best act going in the company today.
Stop. It's the Kofi skip with the up clap. Oh my God. The up clap is one of the greatest things I've ever seen while he's skipping. And I'm all in on the New Day completely. And like you said, it's like Edge and Christian. It's like they got a new coat of paint or something like that.
There it is, folks. There it is.
The inside stuff that I know.
Remembering things.
Yeah, look at me retaining wrestling knowledge. But the whole bit with them setting pipes to sea or whatever it was.
The pitch pipes. Yep.
The pitch pipes to sea. And I was watching it with Adam, and we couldn't stop laughing. We couldn't stop laughing. And I'm like, holy God, if they don't give the belt to the New Day, it's ridiculous. And Xavier just screaming the whole time throughout the match. He's like talking about the breakfast that they have.
He's talking about tricep meat.
Oh my God. And I'm like, he doesn't stop. And I think I've said this before with Leonard on our podcast. It's like a half hour before the match, it's like they eat sugary cereal, down it with Mountain Dew, which was the sponsor, and then take some amphetamines and then go do their match, because that's the kind of energy that they have.
Oh, totally.
For 10, 15 minutes. And Xavier's like amazing on the sideline. I thought he was fantastic, but that's just me.
No, WWE's no, it's not just you.
They're gonna have to start testing them for sugar snaps.
Sugar, so we clap so we don't sugar snap.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, at one point Xavier was talking about Kofi's Icarus shoe game on being on point, but those sure looked more like Kevin Condren's shoes to me.
Oh boy.
You know, shoes.
Someone's sour over that.
I bet. No, those were actually Adidas Jeremy Scott's that I've actually seen on eBay, and they go for about $300 to $350. And so you can actually buy those. You can buy the gold ones.
I'm thinking about getting those.
I think Kevin's were custom made.
Probably. I would imagine.
But yeah, you know, so like I said, the match, it doesn't matter what the match is.
No.
It's all about the New Day.
It really was.
Go out there and have like stinker matches. Just as long as they do their shtick before and after, that's really all that matters at this point.
One of my favorite things that Big E did during the match was at one point he had Darren Young in an abdominal stretch, and he was slapping his side to the New Day Rocks rhythm.
Yes.
And I was just like, it's the little things.
Yep.
That make them so great.
And on a side note, since I've been told how the Lucha Dragons entrance to the ring works, it's not as magical anymore.
No, it's not. But
I'm sorry to ruin the match.
It is. Sometimes you need to know when to pull the curtain back and when not to. And this was a not to.
One of the other moments that I loved in this match, another Xavier Woods moment was when he took out El Torito, mm-hmm. and then like celebrated like he had just body slammed Yokozuna.
Pretty much.
He just so good. You know, everything that those three guys do right now.
I'm just sad we're not going to get a singles match between Torito and Xavier Woods.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And I have a quick question because of New Day, which I don't understand. I think Adam told me, they tag team under the Freebird rules or something?
Technically, yes, they do. Basically, so any combination of the three of them can defend the titles. But okay. It seems to have been pretty consistently Big E and Kofi as the tag team.
Oh, that's what I thought, but I wasn't 100% sure, so I figured I'd ask.
Well, no, you're not going to give up on Xavier being down there barking at the crowd the whole time, because that's gold.
I think that's part of it. Yeah.
One thing I remember too about this match is it started out with the New Day trying to pin themselves,
yes.
to get the title,
which is a brilliant maneuver.
It is, but I don't know. Is that something that maybe had they finished the match with it that way, it would have had more of an impact? Because when it happened, I was like, "What's going on?" And Michael Cole mentioned that would have worked, and I'm like, "Wow, they kind of blew that really early. Like they actually could have built to that."
But then they would have had a SummerSlam match with a weird ending.
Oh, that's right. Those don't happen.
Yeah, there's no precedent for that.
Exactly.
Actually something from way back in the Attitude Era where it was like a multi-team match like that in an episode of Raw. I think they even alluded to it in commentary a bit. And the New Age Outlaws were in the match. They were the tag team champions, and it was like three teams against them. They both get tagged in, and everyone thinks like, oh, man, they're going to beat each other up. They're partners. This is what we want to see, these jerk New Age Outlaws. And then they just pinned each other, thusly winning the match and retaining the titles. Right. Okay. And then it made the rule after that, like, no one could ever do that again.
Oh.
Until now, apparently, because they said it was viable. But, okay.
Don't ever take anything that Michael Cole says as gospel.
It's, right. You got to listen to
LBJ.
LBJ, yes.
You gotta go to a seance, get a member of Lyndon B. Johnson's family, and then
he's the one who has all the information that never is wrong.
Right. That's right.
And then, of course, at the end of the match, we had Kofi's butt bounce, which might be one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. Him bouncing around the ring on his butt, celebrating.
Again, they're ridiculous. I just hope they're able to keep this act fresh for a very long time.
Same here. Yeah. So the next match was Ziggler and Rusev, featuring their respective seconds, Lana and Summer Rae.
Mm-hmm.
I was not high on this match. It was fine. It just I don't know. I'm kind of done with this story. The story has kind of lost me.
Okay, this is one of those, and Leonard will tell you, Rusev's one of those characters that I really love right now. Okay. From his stand-up routine, his great stand-up routine, to the flag coming down and the flag on Twitter with, like, the flag all over in Portland. It's on the moon. I'm like, I'm buying into this. It seems like to me that the crowd gets more into Summer Rae and Lana slapping each other and tackling each other than they do Rusev and Ziggler. And then the match happens. One thing that stood out to me was Ziggler doing a move, I don't know what it would be called, where he does a flip and lands on the chest of Ziggler and then rolls off. And I don't know if anybody remembers it like I do, but I remember like Ziggler getting squashed by Rusev. Like, it's like, no, he didn't put his feet down. This was all 300 or 180 kilos of Rusev right on his chest. I thought Ziggler was going to die. And then they robbed me of Rusev winning with a double count out. So I don't get to see the flag. To me, I was disappointed in this match. That's the way I look at it,
though. Yeah. The only thing that I can figure out is that this match is to set up a mixed tag team match.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The original plan was supposed to be a mixed tag match here.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, I don't think Ziggler was injured. I think he was doing a movie or something.
Okay.
So that kind of put the skids on it. And so funny to say that you're like, you're sick of this, that this is like their first match.
Yes, but the story itself has been going on for, it feels like, 3 months now.
Close to that.
So,
sure.
You're right. You're right. This is the first time that we've seen them wrestle, but the this love quadrangle is, I'm kind of done. I'm just kind of tired of that.
And at least we got the crappy ending of a match out of the way during SummerSlam.
That's
I'm
just going to keep burying it anyway.
And I'm not sold yet on Lana wearing the denim jumper or whatever it was that she's wearing.
Ugh.
I don't know. It's going to take some getting used to, because she's been in the same dress or the same sort of ensemble for quite some time. And this new look, I'm not sure if I'm into it yet. I'm sure I'll get there eventually.
It reminds me of so many girls that I went to high school with in Southern Illinois.
And I'm not even sure what, because I started watching for Kevin Owens. I don't know if we know that yet, but so I'm watching So as I'm watching this, and I'm watching Rusev doing the cold fish routine and everything, I never got to see Ziggler, right? So I don't even know what Ziggler's bag is. Basically, the Monday night before SummerSlam, Ziggler comes out and they get in their little scuffle, and then Ziggler's fighting in SummerSlam. So a pretty boy from the 80s, is that his angle?
That's a good way of describing it.
Because that's the way it was described to me while I was watching it by somebody. So I'm like, I have no idea what Ziggler is. I know what Rusev is, and I like it. But the whole feud with somebody, an unknown to me, is the best way to put it.
Right.
Ziggler's really good. Don't be surprised if you see post Night of Champions a Ziggler Owens program.
Which I would totally be down for.
Yeah.
Totally be down for that.
You'll get to learn more about Dolph Ziggler and what he could do. Again, it's less about his character, I guess, at this point. And, you know, he's the show off. He's going to steal the show, blah, blah, blah. And he takes a really good beating.
Yes, he does.
He takes a very nice professional wrestling beating.
Okay, right. Fine. Like I said, I'm willing to give him a chance, but I have to get to know him.
All right. So the next match on the docket was The Arrow and Neville versus Stardust and the Cosmic King, King Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
The pre-match promo for this, with the sort of halftone artwork and everything, was awesome. And the sort of comic book cover that they did, like a pre-match poster, I would totally buy a poster of that.
Did you see the shirt that they had that was similar?
No. I did not.
I think in one of the backs, there was a backstage segment with Jon Stewart and Neville. And
oh, was this the one where he was talking about how he knew The Undertaker and they went casket shopping?
Yes.
Okay.
right. So Stephen Amell is wearing the shirt in that.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. And I'm gonna have
Like I could find the link for you, I'm sure. You could find it, you know, whatever. But, like, it's like for proceeds for a charity, so on and so forth. But it's, like, a weird, like, design, because he had the sleeves cut off, because, of course, he's a gassed-up freak. but it's kind of, like, almost like a weird, like, baseball-y looking shirt.
Okay.
So I'm like, yeah, that's not my bag.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just real quick, so we can touch on it, the fact that The Undertaker was actually involved in a comedy skit back, you know, I tweeted out after I saw it, I was like, is this real life? Because this is not, none of this makes any sense right now.
Jason, this is something I'll have to find for you later. You talk about The Undertaker in a comedy skit. This gave me flashbacks to SummerSlam 1994, where The Undertaker was missing. And they were having a match at SummerSlam of The Undertaker versus The Undertaker. But building up to that, they got someone on the case to try to find The Undertaker.
Oh, Jason, my God.
I know, David, you know who
it
was.
Yep, I do.
Okay, Jason, do you want to guess? Think it's 1994.
94, yeah. Oh, my God.
WWE. Who it could have been that they got on the case?
Yes, go ahead, Todd.
Was it Ace Ventura?
Close.
Okay, you're in the ballpark.
You're in the ballpark.
No, you're gonna have to tell me.
Lieutenant Frank Drebin.
Oh my god.
And again, I don't want to give away the end of the bit, but like there's a series of skits that air on WWE TV leading up to obviously surprise Frank Drebin not finding the Undertaker. But one of the sponsors for SummerSlam that year was Domino's Pizza. While he's at his desk going through his materials and whatnots, the Undertaker delivers the Domino's pizza to him and says in the Undertaker voice, "Your pizza." And he's like, "Just put it on the desk." And that was the payoff to it.
It's so good.
So to say that the Undertaker has never been involved in a comedy skit, they're hoping people forgot about, you know, 21 years ago or whatever it is. I'm going to have to mute my mic for a few minutes. That's okay.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, okay. I take that back. That's fantastic. Whew. All right.
So this match actually I was pleasantly surprised by this match and how well Stephen Amell acquitted himself.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to agree because not being a wrestling guy like you guys, I figured this match was gonna be the four of them with Neville doing the heavy work. It was going to be like tag in Amell. He's going to do his arm bar. He's going to do drop an elbow, maybe take a body slam and then hot tag out. And that was it. And I have to admit him starting the thing, leapfrogging over the ropes. And for somebody, who's an actor, who's got to worry about his career after this, he put on some moves. And then all I could hear in my head was like the before the pre-match when he went off the top rope out and jumped outside the ring to them. They're like, they're back there like the CW, like empty suits are like, "You guys better catch him." That's all I got to say is you better catch him. And or Arrow is over. Yeah, just like snap.
Ah. Right.
But I had a blast with this. I thought this was a fun match, and Amell did great. Obviously, I'm gonna don't have to say that the other guys like Neville's amazing, and so I have no problem with that. So yeah, the loose what could have been the weak link stood up as far as I was concerned.
Yes, completely agree.
Yeah, I was happy with the amount of time that Amell was in the ring actually actively wrestling, so 100% agree as well.
I would have to go back to the annals of history and whether we're talking about on pay-per-view or on a Raw or whatever it was, but I would definitely say that was in the top 10 of celebrity performances in a wrestling match.
Sure.
And outside of a wrestling match, it's number two, with the first ones always being Pete Rose being Tombstone by Kane.
Specifically the time that he was dressed up as the San Diego Chicken.
Oh, that's one of the best. Even I remember that.
And I tweeted this out, and I legitimately, this is where my mind went, because when I'm watching WWE, like, they have me and the rest of the world so trained that, like, only the WWE exists, right?
Right.
And so they're talking about the thing with Stardust and Amell, and Cole brings up, they're like, "Oh, Lawler, you had a deal with a Hollywood celebrity before in wrestling." And I thought, I'm like, wow, how odd of them to bring up the thing with him and William Shatner during the Tech War day. Not even this joke. That's where my mind went to. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, Andy Kaufman stuff." And I'm like, "Oh, that's right. They acknowledge that."
Right.
That's one of the things we're allowed to know about.
Right, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So before we get off this match, did anybody else see comicbookresources.com had a poll up about whether or not Stardust should appear as a villain on the Arrow television show?
He should. Done.
Only if he's teamed with the Rainbow Raider.
Oh. Oh, let me just say, book that. That's what I want. Book that.
Well, listen, Stephen Amell from other TV shows to appear right. on the show. So why not like wrestlers? You
absolutely.
Know?
It'd certainly be interesting.
I think you need to get Stardust comic first for them to be able to say, like, "Well, he appeared in the comic."
Yes.
Actually, here's what you do. You take an entire episode and just replace every actor other than Stephen Amell with someone from the WWE. So you get Big E as
As Dig.
Diggle. Yep, as Diggle. You get Paige as annoying girl, Smoke. Oh boy, you have a lot of fun.
Whoa.
Did you just call her annoying girl? That's fantastic.
Just not Paige. Not Paige.
No, both, just so you know. Felicity Smoke is one of my future ex-wives, so watch.
And I am also a Felicity Smoke fan. So.
Well, it's I am too. It's just, you know, it's the shtick. But there you
you're
go.
You're pandering to Leonard, is what you're saying.
Yep.
I think we're going to have to trade off and tag match against whoever's anti-Felicity Smoke.
I think so. I think you're right. You and me, Todd. We got all this. Right. It'll be the big draw at Trios.
Oh. There you go.
Oh, you know what? And this is a side note I just want to mention here as well. So I think – I don't know why this – I don't know where it came up in the pay-per-view, but we're talking about, like, celebrities and so on and so forth and just taking an episode of Arrow and replacing all the people from the WWE. This SummerSlam was the first time that I saw the commercial for WWE 2K16 where they recreate the opening scene of Terminator.
Oh, right.
With all the people from WWE, specifically Dean Ambrose as the guy who Arnold steals the clothes from.
Right.
And Paige is the one who checks out like 90-year-old Arnold's package.
But she gives it. She gives it
dressing at the same time.
But she gives it the approval.
She does.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger didn't look a day over 100 in that, so good for him.
That's where you need the submission sorority right there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
That's this is After Dark, folks.
Yeah. That's right.
Keeping it clean. I'm keeping it clean.
You are.
Clean-ish.
Although I will say, Arnold Schwarzenegger's 90-year-old package is not a sentence I expected to hear tonight.
All right, well.
Good on you.
That's what happens when you let deviants on your show.
That's right. So the next match we had was the Intercontinental title match. Ryback versus The Big Show versus The Miz.
Mm-hmm.
In a match that they've been trying to do for the last 6 months, it feels like.
I want to go on record and say this was the match that I recused myself from. I did not watch this match.
I don't blame you. I had no expectations from this match, and I wasn't disappointed.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, it was just one of the, it was kind of a throwaway. It was Ryback retaining via Big Show helping him win by hitting The Miz. I mean, or. Is that what happened? I don't even remember how this. I don't remember how this match ended. Now
I
think I'm getting confused with the ending of the eight man tag team match from Raw last night.
I think you are. I think you're getting confused with that.
But I think it was like he had Big Show up for the Shell Shock. Miz hit him with something. Then Big Show punched Miz out of the ring. Or punched Miz, Big Show got dumped. I caught the end of it, but it didn't stick with me.
Yeah,
The only thing I really remember about this match was the funny bit of Miz trying to pin Ryback and Big Show back, like keep going back and forth because they had hit each other with something, and Miz was like, "This is my chance," and the pins kept getting shorter and shorter.
Right.
And for me, that was amusing, but I had no horse in this race, so I didn't care one way or another. It was a match that I was like, oh, it's one of the 10. Let's go. That made me laugh. I've had this conversation with Leonard at the shop. I do like The Miz as a crappy bad guy, but don't love him. I get his shtick, and I kind of enjoy it, but I could see it wearing thin. I
enjoy him far more when he's not wrestling.
That's the camp I'm in.
Right.
Okay.
I like seeing him on the show. I like him doing Miz TV. But I can do without him having matches.
Yeah, like it was the odd man out there. It's like two giant, huge, and as I'll take a page from Leonard's book, gassed up monsters. Well, one of them anyway. And it's Miz, and he's in there, and it's just it either play it for comedy. It's like they're playing the him for comedy, but they're playing Big Show and Ryback like seriously against each other. And it doesn't work to me. So right. I don't know. So get him out of there, and Miz, they can go do whatever they want, and let Miz do Miz TV, and I'm fine with that.
Right. So I looked up the finish, and basically what had happened was the Big Show knocked out Miz, Ryback clotheslined Big Show out of the ring, and then pinned the Miz.
Mm-hmm.
So not quite the same as the finish from last night's Raw.
Got you.
So. Let's see. The next match was Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. Featuring the amazing table running antics of Dean Ambrose.
I like all of these guys. I thought this match was good.
It was.
Yeah.
There were some weird directorial choices though. There was a moment where Wyatt basically did what looked like a DDT from the second rope to the floor, but like all of the top half of Dean Ambrose's body was covered by the barricade and you couldn't actually see what happened.
Yep. I remember seeing that and going, well, that was the wrong camera shot.
Right. I couldn't tell if it was a DDT or a DDT or some kind of suplex until I think it was Cole said something about having dropped Ambrose on his head.
Right.
So I assume it was a DDT. But it wasn't. It was a good match. It wasn't quite up to the level of some of those Wyatt Family Shield trios matches that they had a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But you know, solid. And I'm hoping that with what happened on Raw last night, with the introduction of a new Wyatt Family member, that maybe we'll get back to that.
I did not know this happened.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
A gentleman who is in NXT under the name of Braun Strowman, who is a former legit strongman competitor.
But does he make good bread?
I was thinking he does paper towel commercials and bread commercials. Braunie Strowman.
Like it's a very generic name and a very fakey sounding name for someone that's in the Wyatt family, but he's got the look.
Yes, he does. He has a very, very, he sort of looks like Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes, right. He does.
If only Donald Gibb was somehow involved in pro wrestling entertainment, it would somehow be even better. But
yes.
Hey,
it would.
Just for the record, Ogre's name in Revenge of the Nerm was Francis Aloysius Polowatsky. Just so you know, that's why he went by Ogre.
Fair enough.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Now, that's a wrestling name.
Okay, so this was another one of those matches where it was almost being built up as though this is the end of the feud. Mm-hmm. But then the feud still continues because, like, here we are on Raw, new family member. Now the odds are in the Wyatt's favor.
Right.
Who was postulated to be joining Roman Reigns and Ambrose is doing other stuff now. So we'll see. We'll see where things go from here for these characters.
Okay. Absolutely. And so that was followed by Rollins and Cena, which I thought. So going into this match, I thought two things were possible. I thought that Cena would win or there would be no winner and everybody would just keep the title that they came in with.
I'm with you. This was the match where I thought, because they kept saying one man's going out of here with both titles. When we got the Rusev Ziggler double count out, whatever, I was like, that I thought that was going to be the ending to this match.
Right.
And then once that happened, I was like, oh, I think someone's going away. Like I was like, could they do two crappy endings in one show?
And
give us a double count out again? And I was like, no, they wouldn't be that crazy.
Of course not. So I thought this was, until the finish, a really good match.
John Cena has really good WWE wrestling matches. Seth Rollins has really good next level WWE matches, if that makes any sense.
Yes, absolutely.
And Cena mixing in with all these like indie darlings, like having the matches that he's had recently with Owens and having the match that he had here with Seth. And, you know, these sort of matches like this when he was doing the U.S. Open Challenge and he's having these matches with like Sami Zayn and Ambrose and all these different guys. Right. He's stepping up his game to kind of that level where he can mix it in with those sort of guys. Again, I thought the match was great. And again, we could talk about the ending.
Oh,
match was great, but boy, did as soon as Jon Stewart started doing his little dance. I'm like, oh, he's smacking Cena.
Boy. Yeah.
Just like, well, he didn't telegraph it. He faxed it. He emailed it. He did every version of communication he did. Like, literally, we were sitting at Adam's house going, he's turning on Cena. Why, we don't know. But, and then bam, it happens. And I was like, oh my God, that was the dumbest thing. Like it was cool, but the way it was executed was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Right.
No, he makes like two beelines straight for Cena and pulls away because the timing's not right. And I'm sitting there like, what are you doing?
That was pretty bad. There were a couple, before we get to the ending, there were a couple of interesting spots that I really liked. Specifically, there was a moment where Rollins hit a superplex and then rolled through into a vertical suplex powerbomb. That was pretty awesome. And then he stole one of John Cena's moves, where he kind of rolled through a move that Cena gave to him and then picked Cena up, sort of displaying his strength, which Rollins doesn't get to do very often.
No, and Cena is a big boy. He's a big, thick, heavy, you know, guy. You know what I mean? And like,
he's beefy.
Right, and Seth, because he moves around so quickly and he flies around, you don't realize how strong he really is. And like, I was super impressed when he did that to Cena, like rolled through and picked him up and tossed him up for the attitude adjustment or whatever it's called these days, like with ease. It seems.
Yeah. We also got Cena trying to win this match with the figure four, trying to win his 16th title with the figure four.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a bad guy move.
Well, in hindsight, especially with what happened the next night on Raw,
we're going to get there. But
So, you know, obviously we're kind of all over the place with this. So for me, I didn't. Okay. Other than Jon Stewart really poorly telegraphing that he was not going to be hitting Seth with this.
Right.
This was, for me, it's like, okay, they're going to explain this tomorrow night on Raw. And this explanation better be damn good. And the explanation was okay.
Right.
Especially since, and this is for me, and obviously it's sometimes difficult to blur the lines, and I listen to Ric Flair's podcast. Ric Flair's podcast is great. And they've brought up on his podcast recently that, you know, if Cena wins at SummerSlam, that he's going to beat Ric Flair's advertised 16 world title reigns.
Right.
And Flair himself said, he goes, then we'll just start counting the ones that they stopped counting for some reason. So I'm like, okay. And then when Flair comes out on Raw, and Jon Stewart's reason for stopping John Cena was because he did it for Ric Flair. He didn't want someone beating Ric Flair's record of the titles, right? So Cena comes out, Flair comes out, you know, blah, 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 bunch of nonsense. And John Cena beats up Jon Stewart on Raw. I thought it was a lame way to end it. And it kind of just like, it's like, well, that's the end of that. And now John Cena moves on to nothing, I guess.
Yeah, right. I actually thought, I didn't mind the explanation, but I felt like it could have been done more effectively if WWE had done what they're really bad at doing, and that's showing, not telling. I felt like if there had been a segment, instead of the Jon Stewart with Stephen Amell and The Undertaker and Neville segment, instead of that, if you had maybe a segment with Jon Stewart talking to Ric Flair and telling him how much he means to him and how much, you know, the 16-time world champion, how impressive that is and how important it is to him in his life as a wrestling fan.
Right.
I thought that if you have that if you have a segment like that and then this happens, I think it might have had a little more impact. It might have been a little more interesting. Does that make sense?
Yes. See, looking at it from as a child's eyes, as Leonard would say, with me, I watching the pay-per-view and seeing him do the figure four, I really like that.
Okay.
I'm like, I thought it was more, instead of a slap in the face, because Cena's about, like, respecting people.
Sure.
Like, watching the thing where it's like, even when he's fighting Kevin Owens, he's like, you know, you're up here and you belong here and the fans deserve to see you. So I took it as Cena, like, I'm going to beat him with with Flair's move, and it's going to be respect instead of insulting. So I had no problem with that. And then I actually liked the whole reasoning behind it, but once again, I didn't like, I thought where this could have been a cool revelation of what was going on, John Stewart was a rambling idiot doing his bit. And he kept stepping on Cena when he was talking. He's like, but I was just trying to, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, all right, now you're going over the top with it and it's not working. But then he just does what he does to him. And I thought that was funny. So
yeah, I like that's true. I thought it was kind of ironic that, Cena told Jon Stewart that Raw isn't a comedy show.
What? It's not.
Not when Cena's in the ring.
Well, unless he's making really bad Photoshop jokes at his opponent's expense.
No, that was Seth doing that, wasn't it?
No, but no, I'm talking like back like during the Bray Wyatt feud.
Oh, that's right.
When he had done like all those old timey pictures of people who were supposedly Sister Abigail and
And then I liked the line of he's like, you got punchlines? How about I got punchlines too? You stand on a line and I'll punch you. And I was like, that's a Todd joke. I love that. But then I was worried when he picked him up to do the AA that he would accidentally hit Ric Flair's grandfather in the ring
and hurt the
elderly gentleman that was there who was apparently speaking for the Ric Flairs the world. I don't know.
In my mind, like I have a filter, I guess, on my life that whenever 2015 Ric Flair shows up in the ring, I'll give him credit and I'll say I see 1999 Ric Flair. I'm not going to say 1984 Ric Flair. I'm not crazy.
He's 40. He feels 50, but he looks 60. Was that it?
No, that's DDP and me.
Okay. See, I retained some stuff, like we said.
All right.
So the next matchup was the three-team Diva elimination match with Team Bella, Nikki Bella, Brie Bella, and Alicia Fox versus Team Bad, Sasha Banks, Tamina, and Naomi versus Team PCB, Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch. Mm-hmm. There was a point in this match where Paige rolled Nikki Bella out of the ring, and I've become so accustomed to lucha tag rules. But I couldn't understand why Alicia Fox and Brie Bella were just standing on the outside of the ring and not doing anything.
I don't get that.
In Chikara and in Lucha Libre in general, you don't have to have a hand-to-hand tag. If your partner rolls out of the ring and you jump in the ring, you are the legal man.
Oh, good to know.
Yes, that will be important coming up next week.
I'm glad you said it
because I say it all the time.
I know you do. And I tried to say it exactly as you say it.
This also saves me from looking at David and going, what just happened?
There you go.
And also when I have my tag team go, I need to know these rules.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So this match, especially coming off of the Sasha Banks Bayley match the night before, was really kind of a disappointment. Mm-hmm. For me, it was kind of blah. It was long, but with no real reason to be long. Nothing really happened.
Well, it's a 4-hour pay-per-view. There's your reason.
Well, I suppose.
Well, and okay, so you make a great point, but then you look at matches like Big Show, Miz, and Ryback, and that was like 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you could have divvied up some of the time a little bit better. You know, maybe like one more Jon Stewart skit, whatever it is.
No.
Okay.
No. Heyman skit, then yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That made me laugh, but go ahead.
So again, this match was what it was. It was fine. Right. You mentioned the Sasha Bayley match the night before, which was really, really good. And then again, of course, we go to Raw and the prolonged Divas segment with the match, with the Miz, and everything else like that.
That was awful.
Okay.
Terrible.
Oh, Lord.
All right. So I noticed after that segment, Todd stopped tweeting about Raw, I think. Are you no longer a wrestling fan now because of that segment?
It could be. My take on the Divas match was on SummerSlam was, hey, they had a Divas match. Let's move on from that and go to Miz's thing, like you said, which was a train wreck. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what they're... Are they trying to... It was Becky Lynch a lunatic before the Miz TV?
No.
Where she's talking about cyborgs and choo-choo trains ghosts. And whatever. Ghosts. I'm like, we'll take on all comers. You know, men, women, ghosts, cyborgs. I was like, oh, terminating robots from the future. I'm like, okay, when did we take this turn?
Did she watch an episode of Teen Titans Go before she went on to the ring? I mean...
Could be. So I was kind of running out of steam by the end of Raw that around
yeah,
there.
That's understandable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this match was just kind of a disappointment for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, not really worth much. Next was Cesaro versus Owens, and I'm sure Todd has a lot to say about this match.
It was amazing. Best match of the night. No, I
actually did think it was the best match of the night.
Okay.
But
until we get to the last one, I think the last match of the night was the best match, but it got screwed up.
Okay.
This was the overall best match beginning to end. How about right. that?
Okay, there I'll buy go. That.
Yeah.
And I did write down in my notes that I could be biased because Cesaro and Owens are my two favorite main roster guys right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was sort of predisposed to liking this match, no matter how it went.
Right. I don't really have any notes on it. Okay. I don't do the whole, I'm just joking around that you have notes, that like,
oh, I do.
Moves, but what moves, you know what I mean? Because I'm not really into what it is. I just thought they gave one heck of a match.
Yes, they did.
You know, I'm anti-Cesaro, but Leonard will tell you that's Ooh. Because he's fighting Kevin Owens.
Right.
And to be honest, whoever Kevin Owens moves on to will be the worst wrestler to ever lace him up. But I don't. Okay. Cesaro can wrestle. I will not take that away from him.
A controversial statement.
Right. But I don't get Cesaro as whatever it is. I don't know. Like, I'm like, he can wrestle and I appreciate that. But he's not the total package and sculpted from, you know, marble like Kevin Owens, the whole thing from the whole personality to the ability to wrestle. I don't know. I just see Cesaro a little differently. And I don't like the Cesaro section. There should be an Owens section. That's all.
I don't know. I could give Todd a hard time about his Kevin Owens love, but I like Kevin Owens quite a bit. Not right. as much as Todd, of course. I'll save that for the comic shop, giving him a hard time in public. But yeah, I really like this match. My only complaint about this match, I wish there was a way that both guys could have won.
Right.
Because like both guys could have used the momentum. Like, yes. You know, Owens coming off a bunch of losses on pay-per-view. Somebody pointed out that the last time that Cesaro won a singles match on pay-per-view was 2 years ago.
Yikes.
Wow. At the 2013 Night of Champions.
Wow.
So nice. He could have used a win there too,
yeah,
but I think Cesaro is kind of a little bit more established on the main roster right now. You know, because he's had like granted it was on SmackDown, but he's had like a win over Seth, and he's had like the really good matches on TV, which, you know, while the matches on pay-per-view mean quite a bit, they're also on the network and more people see them on TV.
Right.
Cesaro could afford the loss more than Owens at this point. Like, if Owens lost this match, I think that could have been, like, the end of him.
Well, plus Cesaro gets to do those mid-match, you know, feats of strength. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, like, that deadlift, the gut-wrench suplex from the second rope that he did on Owens was ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, that's so awesome. And it's stuff like that that makes me like him. You know, I've stopped being surprised by the things that he can do, but I'll never stop being impressed.
This was actually my first taste of Kevin Owens.
I really?
Seen him before. Yeah, I have not seen him before now. And, I mean, how could you not be impressed with what the guy does? It was funny because when I saw him, I said, I know how he can do what he does because he had the look in his eyes. It's the same look I get in my eyes sometimes where it's, he does what he does because he just, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. Like, being able to do what he does, like off the top rope and things like that. You do it because you look at the situation, you go, yeah, I'm just going to go for it. You know, like he's not afraid to just do what somebody his size really normally can't do. He's very agile. But, you know, he just looks at the situation, he goes, yeah, I'll try it. You know, like he doesn't have the filter of, oh, I could never do that. And that's really cool to watch someone who's just like, no, I'll try it because I'm pretty sure I can pull it off. And he just does it. So, yeah, I have seen Cesaro before, so that wasn't the first time for me there. But, yeah, I was very impressed coming away with seeing Kevin Owens. And like I said, Neville may be the man that Gravity forgot, but Kevin Owens is the man that Gravity gives momentary exemptions to.
Yes, he does. I'm glad you're coming around, Jason. I'm glad you're getting on the Owens bus, because there's plenty of room. I'm driving. Sit down, and I'll take you right to WrestleMania main event with Kevin.
Now, I just want to make this this remark here. Todd, without knowing it, has made two references comparing Kevin Owens to Lex Luger. One for the package, and then the other one that he's taking a bus to the main event of some large event.
I honestly, I'll tell you the truth, that's coincidence.
It's absolutely coincidence, and I love it.
Studied it? What?
Does that mean that Kevin Owens is going to cost Sting the match against Seth Rollins at Night of Champions?
I thought you were going to say something much, much worse, which is where I was going with that.
Okay.
No.
Is it the story I had just caught by taking a stab at it?
The story?
What?
Never mind. I'll explain later. Forget it.
You'll have to explain that one to me later.
All right. I'll write that one down.
Yeah. We got Longbox Heroes bits bleeding over into Podvocacy.
I guess. I don't know what's going on.
And After Dark. So, So next up was the main event of the night, which was The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar.
And wait, hang on. Todd, who was it against? Undertaker versus who?
My client, Brock Lesnar.
Oh, thank you for that.
Very nice.
He enunciates
well
just a little bit extra when he says Brock Lesnar. Just a trained ear like mine, I could hear it just a little bit.
Yeah, I think he turns Brock into a three syllable word.
Oh my god.
So this was as you know previously discussed. This was a good match. Mm-hmm. That ended in a really weird, bad way. There were a couple of interesting moments in this match that I think a lot of people liked more than I did.
Well, I know of one.
All right. So there was a moment during this match where both men were down and Lesnar sort of mocked the Undertaker by doing his zombie sit-up. I thought that was fun, and then Undertaker did it immediately after, and Lesnar sort of broke into a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Undertaker made this really, really strange face and this really weird laugh, and it, for some reason, it totally took me out of the match.
He mocked Lesnar mocking him.
Right.
That was my favorite one.
Was it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm with Todd. I love that.
Okay. First of all, he kind of did old school. So I was happy about that.
Right.
I was like, if I don't get old school, see, I honestly thought that as we're getting to this point and he does the sit up, I'm like, can the Undertaker still do the sit up? Because I can't do one. So
same here. So the sit up or a sit up?
Either one. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
So I'm like, and then they hit the mat and they're both on their backs, and I'm like, and Lesnar does his thing, and I'm like, he's gonna do the sit-up, and I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it. And he pulls the sit-up, and Lesnar starts laughing at him, and then, like you said, he does a laugh that I equate to the Where to Stephanie moment during the Attitude Era. He just cackles and does this like maniacal, like insulting laugh, and then they start just beating on each other, and I went, this match is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I was just having so much fun, and he's yelling again, you have to kill me. Like I said, I loved everything about this match except one thing. That's it.
Yeah.
So the ending? I like this match quite a bit. Way, way, way better than their WrestleMania match.
Yes.
Going into this match, I want to say that I had an inkling, nay, a feeling that this would be leading to yet another match.
Right.
So I kind of sort of knew Undertaker was winning, because the way that it had to work was, like, you know, each guy has to win a match, and then, you know, then they have the rematch, whatever, whatever. My thing was, is like, how are they going to convincingly beat Brock Lesnar in this match? I'm like, they can't, because he's Brock Lesnar. And, like, that's the, I guess, the good and bad of Brock Lesnar. Like, a friend of mine was saying, like, oh, they should just put the title on Brock Lesnar. It's like, okay, well, they put the title on Brock Lesnar. Now, they don't have anyone who's at a level that can convincingly beat Brock Lesnar.
Right. And that's why you have to have a finish like the one at WrestleMania.
Right. Or a finish like we saw here.
Right. Exactly.
Where Undertaker wins, he gets his hand raised and he leads. And whether it's, you know, and obviously Undertaker cheated, it was a low blow, he tapped and the referee didn't see it. All these things kind of puts that loss into question. Now, we're probably not going to hear from The Undertaker, I would say at the earliest, until the Raw after Survivor Series. Like, that's the next time we're going to hear from The Undertaker. And at this point, if he just says, I beat you, and that's it, and then that kind of puts Undertaker in the role of, like, well, he's the heel, Brock is obviously the face at this point, people are not going to boo Brock Lesnar at this point. I didn't hate the ending as much as everyone else did, because I know it's leading to a third match.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Could I give you my ending that still would have led to a third match? And in all honesty, this isn't a bit. This okay. is my ending. You know when he's got him in the, what was the arm lock called?
The Kimura?
The taker care of business?
The taker.
That was actually what it was called back when he was the American Badass Taker.
Booger Red.
Oh my God.
Booger Red. This is my yard. Oh, wow. That's jazz.
But no,
Hell's Gate is the Undertaker's submission, but it used to be called Taker Care of Business.
Oh, is that like disarm her?
Yeah.
Right. Gotcha. So, all right. When Brock has him in the Kimura, is that what you
Kimura.
Said it was?
Kimura. Yes.
Kimura. And you know how, like, he's, you know, the ref's putting his hands underneath his shoulders to see if he's on the mat. I think it would have been great if the ending, and if you could have timed it right, is if Taker tapped at the exact time he had him pinned on the mat. So you have this whole thing of, all right, the timekeeper sees Undertaker tap, but the ref says, oh, no, I counted three on Lesnar, and then people would be like, who the hell won? I don't know what's going on here. And then the next night you could have Taker like, the three count happened. And then you have Lesnar like, well, he tapped at the exact same time. And I think that ending would have been more exciting, more screwed up. And you would have been like, now I demand a third match.
Now, actually, it's funny that you bring that up, because they actually did that finish many, many moons ago with Undertaker and Kurt Angle.
Oh, okay.
And this is the funny thing, is they did it on a SmackDown taping and the timing was off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So after all the people had left, they had them redo it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it with the timing done correctly. So when the match airs on TV, it goes to a super tight close-up where there are no fans.
So you can't see any of the empty seats.
So you can't see any of the empty seats, and they just splice that correct ending in where the referee's hand is coming down for the three at the exact moment that Undertaker is tapping. Who's the winner? It's a disputed finish, and so on and so forth. And while, Todd, I do agree with you that could have been a way to do it, I'm sure in their mind they're like, well, we've already done it once before. And then secondly, they're like, well, there needs to be some sort of thing where, like, we can leave the pay-per-view instead of saying who's the winner, that we could say, well, Undertaker won. That's the referee's decision. Now, for me personally, just for a little bit of an extra twist on it, because the thing that I didn't like about it was that Paul immediately called up for the instant replay.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they not do an instant replay in every single match where something bad like this happens? It sets a strange precedent that it's like, okay, we're going to do it here, but not everywhere else.
Maybe it could only be for the main event. You only get one, like in football, you only get so many like challenges.
You have to throw the red flag.
So, that would be fantastic.
So what I would have did was, because like when I first saw it, like you do not see the Undertaker tap. You just don't see it.
Right, no.
Right, because the way that it's shot, and like, you know, we talked about in the 2/3 of the Shield versus the Wyatt family match, where like camera shots were missed all over the place. Like that's something that very easily could have been messed up by a camera shot. So what you do is, at least in my opinion, just for something a little bit different, maybe you throw a plant or something in the crowd who shouldn't be taking video with his camera, and he gets video of this on his camera and gives that to Paul. And Paul shows that the next night on Raw. Paul like shows that to the referee right after it happens. Instead of like the camera was certainly filming it, it just we didn't show that to you initially. Right. The fact that like Paul, instead of just immediately saying, like, I know there was a different angle of this shot, right? I think it would have been, it just added a little, I can't explain quite what it would add, but it would just like add a little bit of uniqueness to it that like a fan calls Paul over and says, yeah, I have video of him tapping out here. Look, gives Paul his phone. Paul gives the phone to the tech guys. They put it up on the screen. It's like a grainy, like bad shot of it, but still it's enough to put dispute in everyone's mind.
Right.
Right. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think even easier is, you know, you have to put the plant in the crowd, although I actually do like the idea a lot, Leonard. That would have been cool. Just have JBL or King see the tap, so you don't have all three announcers sitting there going, "What's going on? I'm confused. What happened?" Have at least one of the announced team see the tap. I don't know if they should have showed it from the camera angle. That probably would have helped too, so that we could have seen it at home. But I think just having one of the announced teams see it so they can go, hey, we need to review the tape. Obviously, they did that. But when you have all three of the announcers confused and you have the referee confused. Now, of course, I've watched enough wrestling to know that, you know, nothing happens by accident. There was a reason that bell rang. It's not like the timekeeper accidentally knocked him with his elbow or something. So, you know, gone are the days where I went, oh, who made a mistake? You know, that doesn't happen. But, you know, just having one of the announced team going, no, I saw the tap. Let's look at the tape and we'll figure this out. As opposed to all three of them, you know, acting like idiots, like, oh, what's going on? You know, no one knew what was going on. And that, I think that really contributed to just it not being that great of a finish.
In fairness, it is Michael Cole, JBL, and the King.
Touche. I was actually about to say that as a commentator myself. You know, I'm sure they were given direction to call what you see on the monitor.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, and if one says it, then that kind of, I don't want to like say like if two of them are saying yes and one of them are saying no, like, okay, who's the one that's going to say no? Is it going to be JBL, who's a clown? Is it going to be King, who's a clown? Or is it going to be Michael Cole, who has little to no credibility? So, like, honestly, like, listen, I'm saying this not as, you know what I mean? Like, believe me, you can remark about my commentary until you're blue in the face, but like, this is the way these characters are portrayed on TV.
Right. Absolutely. You
know, it's not like I'm saying this is my personal beliefs. You know, this is how they're portrayed on TV. So at least if it was Cole who said it, then he's arguing with two people who are effectively clowns. Mm-hmm. So like his argument is for not, or their argument is for not. So it had to be all three of them seeing it. But either way, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I actually thought they were going to announce like officially the rematch, last night. But like I said, okay, they didn't. I'm sure they're going to announce it probably the Raw after, like, that's going to be the first time they have any sort of confrontation again, the Raw after Survivor Series, and then probably Royal Rumble ish time.
Yeah.
Again, don't be surprised if, because the referee did such a poor job, that they get like a Stone Cold referee to kind of call things a little bit better.
Get right out in the middle.
Yeah. But that's just my postulation. I have nothing to base that on other than, you know.
Well, the next WrestleMania is in Texas. There's no way Austin isn't involved somehow.
Right. And, exactly. And again, it's Austin involved. It's Taker involved. Effectively, it'll be Taker's last match. You get Undertaker and Brock, you get Undertaker and Stone Cold, you get these three personalities in the ring, and you kind of give two of them like their real official send-offs, being Taker and Stone Cold.
Right.
And then you could push Bo Dallas, who got himself into the feud on Raw.
Oh, goodness. poor Bo Dallas.
That made me laugh because, hey, I have to say, I don't know who this Paul Heyman guy is before I started watching wrestling.
But, oh, man, Paulie.
But I've come to respect him between his Battle Hymn of the Brock Lesnar promo. And this week when Lesnar just suplexes Bo Dallas into oblivion and Heyman keeps stopping Lesnar on the ramp going, one more time. Let's do five. And he goes back and he does it. And then you're like, all right, that's it. And then he stops him again. And he's like, come on, for me. And he's got that jerk face.
Like, oh, man.
For me, you know, and he goes back in and he does it again. I'm like, oh my God, I'm all in on this young and up and comer Heyman.
Paul E is a delight.
Yes.
Paul Heyman, everything that he does and everything that he's done, I don't know, since the AWA. I was gonna say, you want to go back to the days of Continental or the AWA.
I was a fan of his when he was managing the Midnight Express in the AWA.
Uh-huh.
And I have never stopped being a fan of his.
Yep. And like that was one of those guys, like, you know, like occasionally I would get Continental or I'd read about in the magazines. And then when he showed up on AWA, you know, and then he was aligned with the Midnight Express. And then was he? No, that was DDP who was with Bad Company. But right. Again, like that was the time where like he was just on TV all the time. And then he shows up in WCW, NWA.
Dangerous Alliance. And...
Right. All that stuff is just great. Great, great, great. And obviously he's become a little bit more comedic over the years.
Comedic?
Yes. But he's always had the jokes. He's always had like the sly thing, like the one-liner.
Oh,
like
he's very
some sort of
witty,
reference
yeah.
or remark in his promo that is just like, oh, you son of a, I'm gonna, you got, like, I want to hate him, but that was a good one. He got one over on the guy.
I love when he gives the crowd the business, like, because he'll know what to say to get the reaction and be like, oh, I got, you know, material for all 3 hours. Don't give me that. He's like, you can all shut up. I'm like, oh my God, you're the best.
Yeah, the fact that
this is gonna be the greatest Raw ever. Yeah. All for 3 hours. Well, it's gonna be fantastic.
What I thought was great was that he kept insulting the Brooklyn crowd, and then when he said that, they all popped. They were all into it.
That's sign of talent.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
So thoughts on the show as a whole on SummerSlam?
Who was the guy with where the statue was?
Oh, we didn't get to that.
No, we didn't. That's right. So as a result of
the guy?
The crow came out.
That's right. The crow did come out. As a result of Seth Rollins winning his match versus John Cena, he was supposed to be rewarded with a bronze statue in the mold of Bruno Sammartino and Andre the Giant and the Ultimate Warrior.
And no one else.
I was going to say, wasn't there another one? Yes,
that's right. And so they had the unveiling ceremony at the end of Raw last night. And that statue looked an awful lot like a real live version of Sting.
Okay.
Right. So was it backstage and they were teasing it and then they somehow brought it out to the ring?
Yes.
It was spoiled for me because like people were tweeting, like, I guess like right before the second to last match or the second to last segment. Like, people are like, oh, they turned out all the lights and they smuggled someone under the ring.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, man.
That sucks.
And then, like, yeah. So, they, you know, Seth cuts this promo, you know, he's not the future, he's the now, everybody stinks, blah, blah, blah. They unveil the statue, it's Sting. Sting runs wild, beats up Seth, runs Stephanie and Triple H out of Dodge. And they set up at the next pay-per-view that Seth is defending the Strapola against the Stinger. Vigilante Sting.
Which, I'm a huge Sting mark. I have been since 1987, and so I'm into this.
Mm-hmm.
I feel kind of bad saying it, but I'm totally into this, and I want Sting to win the WWE title.
Let me tell you my take on it. I was like, I know who the Sting is. He's not the bass player from the Police.
Right. Not Gordon.
not good. All right. So I'm watching. Oh, I'm
shoot
like,
names, guys. Come on. You're going to get me in trouble.
You're all shoot trash. By the way. So I, like when they, I was like, who's it going to be? Cause I have no clue. Like, I'm like, somebody's going to be in there. At least like, you know, I'm smart enough to know that this is, it's not going to be the big candy statue.
Right.
I'm like, okay, it happens. I'm like, oh, it's Sting. Do you know what I know about Sting? He's the vigilante Sting. Apparently at one point he was Surfer Sting. And I only know, I've never seen Sting wrestle.
Okay.
So I've only known him from leering down creepily at people from the rafters.
He used to do that quite a bit.
Yes. So like when Sting's standing in the ring, I'm like, yeah, I this is going to come to a show. I'm like, I don't care. I don't know what's happening here. I don't know who he is or what he does. He's Dolph Ziggler to me right now. I know about much about him as I do Dolph. So I'm like, okay, this could be cool. I have to get into this now.
Right. Sting is one of those guys who, you know, for people who watched a certain, you know, who watched WCW, NWA, UWF in the mid to late 80s and the 90s, you know, he was my guy.
Mm-hmm.
More than Hulk Hogan, more than Bret Hart, more than Shawn Michaels, Sting was my guy.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, and don't feel too bad that you haven't seen a Sting match, Todd, because I saw WrestleMania and I still have yet to see a Sting match. So, yeah.
And Leonard, did this bring up thoughts of the Abdullah the Butcher thing for you?
Well, yes. Again, a great man once, a great man greater than all of us in Terry Funk, hashtag Terry Tuesday, said, doesn't matter who you are, what the situation is, if you debut coming out of a box, then you're over.
Oh, boy.
If you remember, and again, this going back to the Attitude Era, when Terry Funk made his return to the WWE to help Cactus Jack as Chainsaw Charlie, he debuted by chainsawing his way out of a box.
I vaguely remember.
Oh, that sparking toy chainsaw.
Right, right. So that's Terry Funk logic right there.
Right.
If you debut coming out of a box, then you're immediately over. The Vigilante Sting, I guess, you know, it's going to be a really good match. Yeah. You know, Sting, I'm surprised that he's wrestling. I want to hear a promo where he talks about his reasonings for coming back now after WrestleMania. Ironically, after WrestleMania, where he cut a promo as a network exclusive and beat up Bo Dallas as well.
Poor Bo.
Yep. And he said, I don't know if I'll have another match. I don't know what my thing is going to be. And obviously, like, why now? Why is he choosing to come back? But yes, I would much rather it be like 90s Surfer Sting as the Sting that we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. But
more intensity, like a different character, you know, however you want to slice it. You know,
at least he's not Joker Sting.
Yes. But you know what, though, for what it's worth, like Joker Sting, you know, in TNA and, you know, all that jazz, like I got a kick out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else to say about SummerSlam?
No, not really.
Okay.
It was slam-tastic.
It was slam-tastic.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing I think, there should have been more slams. It was slam-like.
I missed it being more beach-themed, like how they would do in the days where, like, SummerSlam, they'd be like, it's the world's biggest beach party, and then have, like, some sort of gimmick like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I guess being in Brooklyn, I would have been. Brooklyn, not really known for its beach parties, I don't think.
Right.
But, I don't know, all that beachfront property in Brooklyn.
Right, yeah.
Well, instead of a beach bash, it could have been, you know, a polluted water riverbank bash.
Falls count anywhere in the Hudson River or something.
That's right.
Because once you fall in the Hudson River, you're not getting back up from the Hudson
That's
River.
Right.
That's exactly right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this SummerSlam special. Our joint Podvixy and Longbox Heroes After Dark show. You can find Longbox Heroes at longboxheroes.com, Podvocacy at podvocacy.com. And so thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Not a problem. Thanks for joining us.
It was wonderful.
Yes, it was.